On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The mega billions are flying on Wall Street today, but not in a game you're likely to play. Private equity, super fat cat private wealth, is buying up publicly traded companies off stock exchanges like never before and taking them private to rework and resell, they hope, for fantastic profits. If you own ordinary shares on Wall Street or work for one of the companies, you're in the peanut gallery of this game, but you're not unaffected. The private equity hotshots say they bring a cleansing efficiency to the U.S. economy. Critics say big money America is bleeding yet another tier of the economy into its own pockets, leaving wages and pensions and ordinary investors as roadkill. Up next on Point, the private equity explosion and what it means for you. Joining me first today from New York is Dennis Berman, mergers and acquisitions reporter for The Wall Street Journal. He's been covering all the latest deals. Dennis, thanks for being with us.
Greetings to you, Tom. How are you?
Great. You must have had a busy weekend. All kinds of stuff popping yesterday. You're reporting this morning. Give us a sense of what's going on out there.
Well, Tom, I'm still catching my breath a little. But to run down the roster of deals, you had a private equity buyout of the country's largest office building company, Equity Office Properties.
Right, based in Chicago.
Samsel in Chicago. There was a purchase of Phelps Dodge Company, which is about, I think it's over 150 years old, one of the country's largest copper and mining companies. It was purchased by a smaller company just last evening. There was the purchase of U.S. Trust, which is a division of Schwab that was bought by Bank of America. U.S. Trust does banking for very wealthy individuals.
Right.
Then there was an interesting deal as it relates to sort of the globalization of the markets in which we live, where a Russian company was buying a steel company for $2.5 billion. I think it's called Oregon Mills, out of Portland, Oregon. So you sort of have a gamut of deal-making that shows what has been a rather breathless year.
No
of,
kidding.
Transactions.
And there's $50 billion plus, and that's just in one day. That deal's done effectively on a Sunday. Dennis, we're going to have listeners who are right in the middle of this deal making and others who have never come near it. Describe for us very simply what's going on here. What are the sort of mechanics of what's happening?
Well, we all may not feel it in our pocketbooks, but overall across the globe, there is a surge of liquidity, i.e. a surge of money that needs to be invested. And that money is coming from pension funds. It's coming from hedge funds. It's coming from wealthy investors. It's coming from state retirement funds in Massachusetts, California, Wisconsin, you name it. And it needs to find a place to go to work.
And the whole stock market is not big enough for that money?
I'm sorry?
And the whole stock market, all the stock markets in the world are not big enough for that money?
Well, there's an opportunity in taking companies private, but based on the following logic. In the same way that people can buy a house with, say, 20 to 25% of the value as a down payment and leverage up the rest with debts, that's what's happening in these big LBO deals. And as you know, if you've been lucky enough, Tom, to buy a house and perhaps see it appreciate, you get all the appreciation without necessarily putting all that money down in the first place.
So oceans of cash here, looking for some place to go, looking for better returns than they can get on the stock market. And in that, looking to buy publicly traded companies, take them profit, and then what, Dennis? They buff them up, they take on a whole lot more debt, and hope to sell them back to the public at a big profit.
And presumably change their operations, and I think you put it well, perhaps change the appearance, the finances, and the day-to-day goings-on in a way that makes them more attractive to public investors. Now, there's some interesting things going on in that regard. To a large extent, that's not really happening. What's going on is that people are essentially making the profit on the difference between using debt to fund a company versus using stock to fund a company.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're flipping it and making the profit basically through financial engineering and not through operational improvements. And secondly, the big change is that the returns that the private equity firms are targeting, which traditionally were in the 20% to maybe even 30% per year,
right,
those are really coming down. So they're in the mid to high teens, which when compared to the Dow Jones Industrial Average this year, which returned about 15%, really isn't that great of an excess return. So the deals are getting bigger and the returns are getting smaller.
What does it mean for the U.S. economy, for the global economy, Dennis, if more and more companies go out of being publicly traded, held in private hands in these kind of chop shops or spas to improve them, depending how you look at it, and then come back? What's the impact for the economy?
I like the spa motif. I picture these companies going to a big steam room and somehow sweating out all the inefficiencies.
Yeah. Meanwhile, on the other hand, their clothes in the locker room are being fleeced of every available.
Well, this is a really good question. If you look at the overall value of these companies as a percentage of overall stock market value, it's still relatively tiny, 1% or less. So the big names we see, Harrah's Casino Company is another one that's being targeted for a buyout. We sort of get the sense in ourselves that there's a big thing happening, and there is a big thing happening. But as a part of the macro economy, it's still relatively small. What it means for the rest of us, well, that's a good question. If you're an investment in a state retirement fund that's putting money into these buyout shops, presumably, at least for now, you're enjoying the returns that these firms are bringing. And that, in some ways, is a good thing for all of us.
The most skeptical eye has been turned on the private equity deals that involve companies' management. Big charges of conflict of interest there when a CEO and the top management start cooperating with not shareholders, but outside money to move the ownership of the company.
Right, and this is the potential dark side of this wave and something that investors need to be very focused on. Yes, if you're in a pension fund, you might get some returns, but perhaps you're not getting the best return possible if you're the holder of just a stock normally. And that's because managements are driving a lot of these deals, and they are essentially getting equity in the companies that they purchase that they've just sold. So imagine, again, Tom, you're there with your house, and you are buying and selling the house at the same time. Where do your interests lie? Are you with the buyer or the seller? And how, if you were a shareholder in a company for a management that's a buyer and a seller, how can you have confidence that you're getting the best price possible if that management will continue to run the company once it's private?
And make a ton of money in the transition. Meanwhile, as these companies that go private operate, you described, I mean, there's a lot of debt brought on to buy them in the first place, and sometimes more debt follows, and that can go to the private investors as dividends, so that once they get out, the company's got more debt, they've got the cash, right?
Yes, we've seen that a lot in the last few years, and it's raised some eyebrows along the way. Basically, you buy a company and you immediately put more debt on it, and that debt essentially pays for cash out to the buyer. So there have been hundreds of millions of dollars paid in the first, in some cases, the first weeks and first months of ownership, where no one can credibly make the argument that, oh, we've really turned this company around. So I think people should be skeptical of those situations. And in about 2 years, Tom, I'll be on the show with you, and we'll be talking about the LBOs that went bad. We can't see them yet because the conditions haven't turned for the economy. But as a percentage of the odds, some of these deals are going to have to go belly up, and people will get hurt.
When they do, watch out below. Dennis Berman at the Wall Street Journal, thanks very much for being with us. Joining us now from Chicago is Steve Kaplan, professor of finance at the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business. He's a leading authority on private equity and corporate governance. Professor Kaplan, thanks a lot for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
So speak to us as fellow citizens here. How should we look on this private equity explosion? Good for the U.S. economy? Good for the American people? Or just good for a few? How do you look at it?
I think Dennis said a lot of good things. I think there are good things and there are things to be concerned about. I think I would be more positive than he is on the overall efficiency on average. There's a lot of evidence that the buyouts do lead to more efficient companies over time.
In other words, the new owners will come in, scrape out inefficiencies, slough off things that aren't working, and there's the economy. It may not be fun, but we end up with more efficiency and therefore more growth, but more health.
That's correct. And they do it in three ways. There's clearly the case they give stronger management incentives. So you become a CEO of a private equity-funded company, the chief executive officer. Mm-hmm. You are probably investing your own money into the company. You're given a lot of upside, more upside than in public companies, but you're also given more downside. And that creates a strong incentive to increase value, perhaps stronger than when they were public. You also see the private equity companies paying a lot more attention to what I like to call operational engineering. So what this means is they, in the good deals, mm-hmm. they will look at a company beforehand, decide here are the things that need to change, and have a plan going forward to change them. And I think a number of the firms have a reputation for doing that.
So there it is. Buff it up, and it works well for the whole economy in theory. But what about the fears of all the debt that's being taken on? They get out of it. The workers are left with that. The company may go bankrupt, but they're on down the road. Is it working as it's supposed to in the textbooks?
I think the concern here is that this velocity of deals is unprecedented. As Dennis said, it's a small fraction of the overall market, but the velocity for the individual private equity firms is very high, so it's more likely they will make mistakes. There are also a number of these companies are probably vulnerable to an economic downturn, and having a lot of leverage in an economic downturn can be, a negative. That said, we went through this in the late 80s, early 90s. A number of the buyouts ended up tanking.
We've been joined from the University of Chicago by Stephen Kaplan. He joins us from Chicago. Right now from Westchester, Pennsylvania, Mark Zandi's with us. He's chief economist and co-founder of MoodysEconomy.com. Mark Zandi, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of it? We've got a tsunami of this private money sloshing around, buying up more and more. Huge headlines today. It's the biggest day ever of it. What does it mean for the economy overall?
Well, there are negatives, but there are also positives. And I think on net, it's probably a positive for the economy.
Because you're going with the efficiency notion here, that these companies are taking off the public markets where they've got to make quarterly reports, buffed up in the private equity shop, and then come, back out and make a lot of money, but also come back out as more efficient operators?
Yeah, I think that's part of the story, but the most direct positive effect, it means higher stock prices. I mean, I think this is happening because stock values are arguably low, and private investors see this, that the equity market isn't pricing these companies properly, and so they're stepping in. And it's driving stock prices up, which benefits all stockholders, which, half of us are stockholders.
Now, and if that's the case, why not just come in and buy the stock on the public market? Why not just buy it on Wall Street like the rest of us?
Well, this is a more efficient, cheaper way to do it for them, and they see higher returns in doing it this way. And moreover, it goes to the point you just made that if they take it private, they have an opportunity to buff these companies up, look for efficiencies and make these companies more efficient and presumably make them a greater value to shareholders down the road.
What's the downside risk here, Mark Zandi? We saw in the 1980s a lot of leveraged buyouts and then a lot of egg on people's faces. What's the problematic scenario people are worried about here?
Well, there's two key costs. One is that there is the potential for conflict of interest, that if management is involved in these deals that they may take too much of the value, which is certainly a risk if these aren't deals closely scrutinized and regulated.
Now, explain that for us. In other words, they're managing a publicly traded company, and instead of maximizing the return for their shareholders, most of us, they're maneuvering toward a private equity deal that could make them a lot of money and isn't necessarily in the shareholders' top interest?
Yeah, I mean, they could sell to a private equity firm, and they also get equity in the deal and continue mm-hmm. to manage the company, and they could cash out in a relatively lucrative way. To ensure that they don't get too much of the value of these deals, it requires a strong, independent board. It requires that other shareholders are vigilant. And it also, most importantly, requires that the SEC is actively involved in making sure that everyone is behaving properly.
So there's a risk factor, and we can easily see how that scrutiny might be skirted. What else?
Well, the other key risk is that often these things go along too far. They become a fad, and deals that probably shouldn't have gotten done do get done. There's too much debt, too much leverage, and ultimately they sow the seeds of their own destruction. And we will see some of these deals not work, and ultimately the investors in these deals will pay for it. So the other risk is that we just get too carried away with this and think it's the be-all and end-all and do too many of the deals.
Stephen Kaplan, that huge ocean of cash that's out there to do these deals, Why has that accumulated here, you know, ready to be at high velocity going after all these companies? Why hasn't that gone out in higher wages, let's say? Why hasn't it been spread around more?
Well, you have a huge amount of capital from a number of sources, the public pension funds, private pension funds overseas, and those funds are looking for returns. So they're not particularly interested in what wages are. I shouldn't say interested. It's not what their goal is. Their goal is to get returns. And that money follows high returns, and private equity returns over the last several years have been high relative to other markets, and all that money is flowing into private equity in the belief that the private equity returns will continue to be higher than the returns in other markets like the stock market.
So it's money looking for that big return. Mark Zandi, what about on that front? There's been a lot of talk about the way the economy has skewed the sort of super wealth at the top. Stephen points to pension funds, but of course it's very wealthy individuals playing this game too. Bill Gates buying out the Four Seasons Hotel Company with a Saudi prince, and other, you know, big private individuals playing here too. Does this aggravate the issue with distribution of wealth that the country's already got a kind of wary eye on these days?
Well, I do think the skewing of the distribution of income and wealth is a problem that clearly has been ongoing for the last quarter century, and all the broader forces that have created this are still in place, and thus argues that we'll continue to see it going forward. But I don't think that this private equity phenomena we're observing is playing a significant role in that process, and I don't think that the solution to the problem lies in trying to limit these kind of private equity deals. The solution lies elsewhere.
I would agree that the solution lies elsewhere, but I think it is the case that all the money going to the private equity funds and the hedge funds, there is a large number of the people at the top end of the income distribution are in those groups, and it's probably not all that different from the number in those groups who are CEOs. So I think it definitely does play toward the widening of the income distribution. However, if you believe that this is driving efficiency, which some of us believe, the right solution, I think, does lie elsewhere.
And Mark, what about investors? Everybody's told to get out there and save and invest now for retirement, and you know how hard it is for a lot of people to get a good return. Here we're looking at returns common in the private equity world of 18%, even 30% some places. You know, does the little guy look at that and justly feel, hey, wait a minute, that's a game I can't really play, but that's where the action's gone. Is the game sort of set up for the big money guys?
Well, you know, it has to some degree, but it is important to point out that most of the private equity deals are financed by pension funds and endowments, and the little guys presumably are in those pension funds.
Well, a whole lot of people don't have a pension at all anymore. They're on their own hook out there.
Yeah, no, great point. But again, that doesn't go to stopping private equity deals. I mean, the deals benefit, clearly they benefit higher income, higher net worth households, but they do benefit anyone who has a pension fund. And that does include many lower and middle income households as well. So I think the benefits are a little bit broader than just CEOs and very high net worth individuals. Clearly the benefits are concentrated, but they are more widely distributed than you might think. The other thing to consider is that these private equity deals are getting higher returns today, but as more of these deals occur and more money comes into this, these returns are going to begin to fall. In fact, they already are falling. And so investors are going to have to look for another way to get those kind of high returns.
Mark Zandi, chief economist at economy.com. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Let me turn to our listeners. Phil's calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
My question or comment really goes to the risks that have been discussed by some of the speakers.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that the risks are really not falling on me as an individual investor. When my stock in a publicly traded company gets taken private, I'm usually paid a substantial premium.
Right.
And if the thing goes belly up, it's these large hedge funds, wealthy private investors who know what they're doing and have probably spread their eggs into different baskets. And if if they lose some money, they've made it up somewhere else. So I'm not sure if the risk is really hurting the American public to the extent that one might think.
It's a good observation and question. A big upside here for investors, but if there's a big downside, Stephen Kaplan, does all that risk sit with the wealthy as well, or could it somehow spill over, you know, with the rest of us picking up the tab for a game we weren't at the table for?
Two risks or two places where it goes. First, the companies that do get distressed will have employees who are hurt. So
get distressed by the debt that's taken on or the whole.
And if the companies have to cut back. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, as I said earlier, that it's not as bad as you might think because these companies historically are done in businesses that are relatively stable. Although, you know, some of the deals, Kinder Morgan is in the energy business and energy prices are very volatile. So that's one. The other place where I think there is potentially an issue has to do with the pension funds that Mark mentioned. They will get lower returns if there's a downturn, and the pension funds represent a lot of non-wealthy people. And if those returns are low, the private equity firms may still do okay because a lot of the money they earn is through fees, mm-hmm. which are not related to performance. And I think that's one concern with the mega funds now is that the private equity investors do make a lot of money just on the fees and will do very well even if performance is not so good.
And the devil take the hindmost. I want to bring another voice into this conversation, if I may. Robert Kuttner joins us from Boston. He's co-founder and co-editor of the magazine The American Prospect, author of Everything for Sale, The Virtues and Limits of Markets, working on a new book on systemic risks to the economy. Robert Kuttner, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So when you look out at the private equity explosion that's underway now, big private money taking companies private, making many billions in the process, what do you see?
Well, I see a lot of insiders making windfall of incomes and passing on risks to other people. You know, if the premise is that some of these companies are being inefficiently managed, and you take them private and you buff them up and then sell them off again mm-hmm. to investors, you have to wonder why the companies that are being taken private include companies like Burger King and Hertz Rent-A-Car that are basically commodity businesses. How much inefficiency can there be in a business like that to be squeezed out? And what often happens is that when you take on a huge amount of debt and you look for ways of running the company more efficiently, which really means taking out costs, the two big places to take out costs mm-hmm. are the workforce and the pension funds. And so you've got a lawsuit now involving Celanese where the people who took it private made, you know, windfall money in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and then terminated the pension fund. And so it's often less a case of efficiency in the sense of running the business more effectively than it is insiders getting windfall gains and ordinary people taking wage cuts and pension cuts.
So when you look at this, what are you suggesting, that it's a kind of rigged for the rich example here?
What's rigged for insiders? Don't forget, a lot of the people who are promoting this are the investment bankers who profit about three different ways. I mean, they profit from the fees, they profit from underwriting the new issue when the company is taken goes public again. Mm-hmm. Some of the insiders pay themselves a fee for taking the company private. And there's just a huge amount of windfall gain. I take a fairly extreme position on this. I think this is not good for the economy for the most part. I think the stock market is a better way of connecting investors to real enterprises. And I would get rid of some of the artificial incentives that are supercharging this, like the deductibility of the interest. I would have a windfall profit tax on quick round-tripping. I would require some of the same disclosures that have to be made when a company is publicly traded, which really protect the whole system. They don't just protect the shareholders, mm-hmm. so that you can't evade the requirement to make these disclosures simply by taking the company private. Mm.
Stephen Kaplan, let me ask you, on this front, Robert Kuttner raises the issue of, you know, who's doing what with these companies. I guess looking on, you've got to ask, why aren't publicly traded companies going for maximum efficiency in the first place? We hear a lot about how highly paid these executives are. The market is supposed to be fully at work in our public markets right there. You know, why are there other efficiencies and profits to be gained in private hands that aren't there in the public markets where most people are invested, if they're invested at all?
I think that's a very good question, and I think you still have situations where boards are not as aggressive with their companies as they could be. I think you also are underplaying the value that some of the private equity firms bring. I would take issue with what Mr. Kuttner said about just doing financial engineering and not adding any value. I think the empirical evidence is not supportive of that claim, and there may be exceptions, but on average, they are doing things differently. And in order to get the private equity investors to pay that attention, there has to be an incentive, and I think that is part of what's going on. The other thing that is happening, which I'm a little sort of hesitant to say, but I think it is not such a good thing to be a public company CEO these days, particularly for good CEOs. The regulation and the scrutiny and criticism that CEOs have come under, because there have been some bad ones.
Enron, WorldCom, and all the rest.
You bet. Yeah. So, but for a good CEO who's being just criticized every day and what he or she thinks is overregulated, going private is a great place to be because you can then pay more attention to doing more strategic things, to doing things that you think are good for your business that you're finding difficult to do in the public markets. And I think that explains part of the reason for the explosion is that public company CEOs don't want to be public these days.
Bob Kuttner, so there we had Enron and WorldCom and all that. Tighten up the oversight a little bit, and the best managers and the money just run away from the game that most people have a chance of getting into.
I don't agree at all, to put it mildly. I mean, if you look at what puts good CEOs under pressure, it's the same mania for quarterly returns that is part of the financialization of the whole economy. It has nothing to do with increased regulatory oversight.
Robert Kuttner, co-editor of the American Prospect magazine, is with us. And Stephen Kaplan from Chicago, University of Chicago, is here as well. Right now from Traverse City, Michigan, Mike's on the line. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi there. I would offer that the compliance with Sarbanes-Oxley for mid-cap to large-cap companies is adding, you know, hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars worth of paperwork. I work for a mid-cap company.
Yeah.
And I'm just a lower level guy, and the amount of paperwork that I have as far as compliance is just unbelievable. And I think that would be one of the major appeals to be able to circumvent having to deal with Sarbanes-Oxley, which really, as far as addressing the problem, I wonder how efficient it has been in doing so.
Right. So you're at a publicly traded firm, mid-size, and you feel like the regulation, Sarbanes-Oxley, that came after Enron, et cetera, is killing you. Steve Kaplan, I know this is a song that you know well. It's part of the reason people want to get out of the public markets. And Mike is saying he gets it down there in the belly of the beast.
He's hearing it at the belly of the beast. I hear it from CEOs. I hear it from private equity investors that is driving some of the desire for these transactions. There is no doubt. And it'll be interesting if Hank Paulson, the new Treasury Secretary, is trying to get the SEC to relax Section 404, which is the regulation that is really costly. And if that happens, that will take some of the demand away from the private equity transaction.
But what about Bob Kuttner's point? And anybody else looking on might say, well, great, you know, we ended up out of the 90s with these huge scandals. Sarbanes-Oxley was put in place to get us away from that. And now what? We're going to swing all the way to the other extreme, privately held, zero oversight, in effect? Is there not a happy medium here?
Well, zero, two things. Sarbanes-Oxley did many good things, and so it's a bill that had a number of provisions. One of those provisions, I think, is very negative. That's 404. There are a number of provisions that are positive. Mm-hmm. Now, going private, remember, there is oversight. The private equity investors are paying a lot of attention to these companies and driving efficiencies. I think, you know, Bob gave an example earlier of some negatives. There was an article in the New York Times just yesterday talking about the changes at Toys R Us, some of the changes at Dunkin' Donuts that the private equity investors have brought on.
But those are not exactly oversight with moral principles utmost in mind. They're looking for a return. These are the investors, after all.
I'm not sure, you know, moral principles in terms of stealing, it's once,
for
the
example,
companies,
yeah.
Once the companies are private, these companies have every incentive to create value by improving their cash flows. And the private equity investors don't have an incentive to do anything illegal because that gets you in trouble whether you're public or private. So I'm a little puzzled, and I'm not quite sure how that would evidence itself.
Oh, well, I mean, we've just watched in the past as companies right in the public eye did all kinds of hanky-panky, and here it's not. But let's set that aside for a moment. I got a call from Watertown, New York. Carl, you're on the air.
Hello. The comment I had to make is I see this as a new wave of corporate greed, whereby the companies go private and people get their fees and then they take out huge amount of loans. And I'm afraid that when the end of the cycle, these loans are going to default and the taxpayer is going to be asked to pick up some of the cost, much like the savings and loan problems back in the 80s and earlier ones.
Yeah.
Could you comment on that?
Sure. Thanks, Carl. Robert Kuttner, what do you say?
Well, I think much too much of the total windfall is made on the front end in the form of fees, and a lot of times the motivation is not to stick around and manage the company. The motivation is to split it up into pieces and find people who are greater fools than you are to buy the thing and load it up with debt and profit three or four different ways. There's a really interesting crossroads here that has to do with the supposed efficiency of capital markets. I mean, if you go back to first principles, the whole point of a capital market is to connect somebody who is going to use the capital with somebody who wants to invest in it. And for years, we heard about this so-called efficient market hypothesis.
Sure.
That stock markets, by definition, efficiently price stocks. Now we hear that stock markets, in effect, don't efficiently price stocks, and that there's this arbitrage opportunity that private equity people can do because the market is underpricing stocks. Here's my question. If corporations and CEOs and stock markets are not as efficient as they could be, rather than relying on private equity firms to somehow wring out more efficiency, and I think that's a red herring because it's often cutting wages, but why not change the law so that CEOs are more accountable to boards? Every time you hear proposals to give boards of directors more real authority, everybody on Wall Street fights a tooth and claw, despite all the genuflection to the idea that we need more accountable CEOs and more powerful boards. Nobody's really in favor of it.
But Steve Kaplan and Mark Zandi are saying already that the boards themselves are not necessarily putting an eagle eye on the companies that they're overseeing as private equity investors might.
That's because a lot of the directors are cronies of the CEO. A lot of the directors are at the same trough. And all of these proposals that occasionally come down the pike by some of the public employee funds to require more authority for outside directors, they get clobbered, and the SEC gets so lobbied that they're never implemented, and Congress is, both parties are taking money from the same people. So I think the regulatory structure is too weak, not too strong.
Steve Kaplan, there's that issue Bob Kuttner raises, and also Carl's question, is it possible that the public gets left holding the bag at the end of this train?
Okay, let's take both of them. The first one about boards, I think boards do have a lot of power. I think boards, public company boards, have gotten much better. So there were some failures in the 90s and early 2000. Those failures have led to improved performance. But even so, there are, in a number of cases, room for improvement. There's also the ability to get away from the regulation. I think that's where you see some of the private equity transactions going. So boards have plenty of power. It's the shareholders that in some cases don't have as much power. And I think some of the proposals for more shareholder power have some merit, and we may see them come with a new Congress. Now, going back to the question,
but on this front, before we let this one go, what about the market efficiency question? If the stock market's supposed to deploy capital to its maximum effect, why are these huge opportunities sitting there for big money to come in and swoop up? You know, why isn't the system working on its own?
Because these are very smart people who are going to add value, and if they're not there to add value, the price is lower.
We're not paying enough to management already to presume very smart people that they would look for maximum opportunities. I mean, isn't that what market efficiency is supposed to guarantee in the first place?
Well, you are supposed to move toward that direction, and I think I would argue that the U.S. economy has moved in that direction. Mm-hmm. If you look over the last 10 or 15 years, the stock market has done very well. The U.S. economy, in terms of productivity improvement, has done spectacularly well.
Mm-hmm.
So the view that the system is not working somehow in terms of efficiency, I find hard to agree with, because the U.S. economy has been an incredible engine of efficiency. Now, the inequality issue is a different one.
Right, and yet these inefficiencies are there to be taken advantage of. What about the question of who holds the bag? We saw, of course, the 1980s, the SNL crisis, the LBO meltdown. We've seen in hedge funds, and of course, a lot of the money being borrowed here comes from hedge funds. Long-term capital went into a swoon, had to be backstopped by the government. Could that happen again? Might Citizen Q end up holding the bag here?
If there's a downturn, I think some of the investors will get returns lower than they're expecting. To the extent those are pension funds, the returns will be lower. And I don't know that the government will bail them out in sort of a very big public sense. But to the extent pension funds of different kinds have less money from returns, they have to make it up somewhere else.
What about a full-blown domino effect? You get big hedge funds falling, massive money in big trouble. You know, does it end up at the public's door?
I would be surprised, but it's conceivable. Unlikely, but conceivable.
Mm-hmm. Mike's calling from Needham, Massachusetts. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say I'm just a little guy,
yeah,
but I'm profiting from this by the run-up in the S&P 500. I can't help but believe that all these private equity funds are driving up the S&P 500.
So it's working for you already just fine. Thank you.
Yes, I've made more money in the stock market this year than I earn doing my job, and it's great for me.
Right on. Good for you, Mike. Bob Kuttner, what do you say to Mike? It's working fine for him. Thank you.
I wonder just how short our memories are. I mean, you know, late 90s were not that long ago, and we heard that all of the shenanigans that were going on in the late 90s were good for everybody because they were goosing up the market. And then payday came, and, you know, we had a bit of a crash. So it's not healthy for the market to appreciate at a faster rate than the real productivity of the real economy. There's a Lake Wobegon problem here. Everybody wants above-average returns. But
that's just a market economy problem, isn't it? I mean, in any market economy, everybody wants above-average returns.
Sure. The problem is, though, everybody can't have above-average returns.
There's no free lunch, as the recently departed one said, Milton Friedman.
Right. But so what happens is you create all kinds of incentives to play all kinds of games so that your private equity fund or your hedge fund can claim that it produces above-average returns. And you're having private equity deals and hedge funds recapitulate exactly the same kinds of conflicts of interest that we saw in the 90s, exactly the same kinds of over-leveraging with LBO deals that we saw in the 80s. And the only thing that's changed is the memory cycle is shorter, so that it takes fewer years for us to remember the last collapse.
Yeah, we hope not. Let's take a call from Jim in Ashland, Massachusetts. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to say I think there's potential for this to be a good thing, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a financial Luddite. I put money in the 401k at financial gunpoint. I have been the victim of two buyouts of public companies.
Why the victim? Why didn't it make your bacon better?
Well, I got laid off.
Oh, but I see. You were working for these companies, not investing.
Imagine that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. And so one of the things that I've seen is the IPO madness of the 90s has led to this quarterly mindset that one of your guests was talking about earlier. And I see that companies, public companies, are really not focused on trying to do what they set out to do in the first place, make a better product, do a better job than their competitors. And if there's an opportunity here for a private buyer, I envision Richard Gere and Pretty Woman coming in and buying a company and saying, by gosh, we're going to take this company and we're going to do something good with it instead of just letting it be run into the ground by stockholders. I think that's a good thing.
So bring it on. Jim, we've got it. Steve Kaplan, here's the American who's been through the LBO layoffs and still looks at this and says, you know, this is how it works.
I mean, that's the argument that some of these investors make, that you take them private, you have the luxury of being able to do some things differently without worrying about what happens every quarter. And companies, rightly or wrongly, I think, pay too much attention to what happens every quarter. And when you're private, you can stop doing that and try to do things that will make the company better.
But if it's juicing and kind of goosing at the margins in a way that puts the whole system out over a cliff, or a piece of it. Let me get one more call here. James is calling from Meriden, Connecticut. Hi, James, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Under the federal ERISA law, the Pension Benefit Guaranty Corporation, which is a federal entity, must take over certain pension obligations, and that's exactly what's going to happen with the airlines who've cut all their pensions. They're going to dump it on the federal government. So to say that these pension benefits, that's not going to fall back on the public, I just think is entirely disingenuous.
Watch out for that risk. Stephen Kaplan, how about it? Do you see a record of private equity buyouts, then those firms then, what, scraping off their pension obligations and leaving them to the federal government?
I think it's highly unlikely that the returns for the private equity funds will be so spectacularly bad that that would happen. I think what is more likely is that the returns, if there's a downturn, may not beat the S&P 500, the return on the overall stock market. I think these investors who are putting the money in, the pension funds, are looking for returns on private equity that are higher than the overall stock market, the public markets. It's possible they'll get that, but it's also possible they won't. I don't think you'll see complete meltdowns that you might have seen with the SNLs, that you might have seen with some of the venture capital funds.
And overall, I mean, we're always looking to tap the vigor of the markets. But, of course, our sense of the best way to do that is always changing. You hear Robert Kuttner saying, we need a lot more oversight here. How do you feel? We hear that, you know, at the theoretical level, you're on board with the private equity work here. When you look at it practically, is it working for the common good as it ought to? Stephen Kaplan.
I think on average, yes. So I would say that the level of scrutiny and oversight is just fine right now.
Bob Kuttner, hunky-dory, off we go.
No, I think there's a fable here that, you know, the company is improved. I think often too much of the money is taken out in fees. Steve was saying that these deals are not going to go so bad that most of them are going to have to give up their pension funds. That's not how it works. The way it works is you loot the pension fund so that you can pay for the fees that you're taking out. And there are many lawsuits where the owners of the newly private company claims that this is a wholly different corporate entity with none of the former obligations of the company that it replaced, so it can just toss the pensioners out the window.
Well,
I think that's unusual.
Unusual, but we sure got some big gorillas at play here. And Americans, you better be paying attention because there's a lot on the line one way or the other. I want to thank our guests in this hour. Robert Kuttner, co-editor of The American Prospect, author of Everything for Sale. Bob, thanks a lot for joining us
today.
And Stephen Kaplan, professor of finance at the University of Chicago. Stephen, Professor Kaplan, great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.